Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Our next guest, sports writer at the Oregonian, Ken Goh, 43 years. He has now, just today, been named the Oregon Sports Writer of the Year by the National Association of Sports Writers and Sports Broadcasters. And here to take a victory lap, Ken Goh of the Oregonian. Congratulations, my friend. Well deserved.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Let's talk about your retirement. First of all, you were on a walk this morning when I called you, and I asked you, how's it going? For those of us out there that fantasize about one day retiring, is it all that?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, really. I mean, to wake up in the morning and know you don't have to work, certainly the possibilities out there if you want to, and there's a million things you can get involved with in retirement, either at part-time employment or full-time employment or volunteering for something that's near and dear to your heart. Or you can do what I've been doing, which is catching up on some yard work. And what I don't get done today, well, there's always tomorrow. I mean, when you're working, you're always sort of trying to squeeze whatever activities you want to do or you know you should do into a finite amount of time because the work thing's always hanging there. But when you're retired, you don't have that. So you can sort of budget your time the way you want, include things you like, things you know you should do, things you know you should do, but you can put off till tomorrow.
What makes a good sports writer?
Well, I think there's a lot of things. I think being fair, being complete, being fast, being objective. But by being objective, that doesn't mean you can't have a point of view, but I think you need to come to that point of view after you've considered all sides. And, you know, I think your role as a columnist, you do that. I think you are very good at seeing all sides of the argument and then, you know, talking to people that give you both sides of the argument and then coming to an opinion. And your opinions are strong, but that doesn't mean they're not well considered or that you're not being objective and fair in your process at arriving at those opinions.
National Sports Media Association today names you as the Oregon Sports Writer of the Year. What does it mean to you to get recognized in that way? I know awards aren't why anybody gets in this business, but I have to think that it's a pretty cool thing, especially in this year for you.
Yeah, no, it's nice. It's nice to be recognized and I look at other people who have won that award. I've worked with a lot of them and admired and respected all of them. Some people, some of the older ones, George Passero and Leo Davis, I admired from afar a long time before I actually got to work with them. Others like yourself and Dwight James and Kerry Eggers are people I've worked with and seen firsthand, you know, the quality of work they do and the sort of the weight they have in the sporting circles in this state. And to be mentioned in the same breath with them is a high honor. And I, like I say, I consider you part of that. You've been a National Sports Writer of the Year. So, to be on a list that you're on is really cool.
Ken, I go back and I look at 1959. George Passero wins the first time this award is given out. He wins it 4 years in a row. And then wins it again in 1966 for a fifth win. In 1968, Leo Davis goes on a six-year run. I didn't know George Passero. I didn't know Leo Davis. But one of those guys was at the Journal. One of those guys was at the Oregonian. What was that like to be to read those guys and see those people competing at that level in that time?
You know, they were very different. They were both really good in their own way. George wrote a column 6 days a week for the Journal, which is an incredible pace. And he also did news stories on top of that. And he ran the sports department at the Journal. He was sort of the voice of the man on the street. The guy that had an opinion and sort of the nuts and bolts, salt of the earth type sports fan. And George gave those people voice and gave them a window into what was going on. Leo was a phenomenal writer. He could capture a scene and describe it in a way that would make you just sit back and go, whoa. He was really good. He also, as a writer, had some really good one-liners. You know, he'd do this great job of setting up the scene and then zap you between the eyes with a one-line comment that was both witty and very apropos of the situation. So they were giants, in my opinion, both of them, but very different men.
We're talking to the 2020 Oregon Sports Writer of the Year, Ken Goh, of the Oregonian. Ken, the national championship game, college football invitational tournament, will culminate tonight with Alabama and Ohio State. I've seen you on social media. You say you're not watching. Why?
I don't care. They've given me no reason to have any interest in the game. In my mind, it's not a national championship game. It's I think you put it very well when you said it's an invitational tournament. It's four teams that the power brokers in college football, the playoff, it's four teams that the power brokers in college football have predetermined will have a right to compete for what they contend as a national championship. But in the process, they've disenfranchised almost the rest of the entire FBS level. I mean, the group of five or whatever they call the non-power conference schools, they never get a shot at it. And a lot of the power conference schools are written off too. So the same four or five, six teams are in it every year, almost every year. There's no national appeal. Why should I care whether Ohio State, what Ohio State plays six games, and then force the Big Ten to rewrite its criteria so they could get into the national championship playoff. That's one of the teams. And the other is Alabama, which is an SEC school. To me, the SEC, as much as any conference, has gone out of its way to try to exclude others from this quote-unquote playoff. And it's sort of undemocratic. And it's just, I don't know, I have a hard time finding any interest in it. One reason I became a sports fan was for the great stories, and one of the things that always appealed to me was an underdog run. The bowl games that stand out in my mind: Boise State beating Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl, Utah beating, I believe, Alabama in the Sugar Bowl, Oregon State going to the Fiesta Bowl. I mean, who saw that coming? And then just whomping the hell out of Notre Dame, and who predicted that? And all these people that say, well, we know who the four best teams are. Well, I defy any of those people to say that they knew that Oregon State was going to wind up winning the Fiesta Bowl, that Boise State was going to wind up winning the Fiesta Bowl, or that Utah was going to wind up winning the Sugar Bowl. They're just things happen, and that's what makes sports cool. And the people running major college football have legislated a lot of that out with the way they've set up the playoff.
Ken Goh, Oregon Sports Writer of the Year, is with us. Favorite athlete, coaches that you covered, and why?
Well, you know, that's so hard, but because a lot of them were favorite and special in their own way. The favorite coach easily was Pokey Allen, who was so different than most college football coaches and successful on top of it. And so many college football coaches, they're not necessarily bad people, but they're really they're control freaks, and they want to control every little thing, and they sort of take a lot of the joy out of the sport. From my perspective, Pokey was the opposite. His motto was college football should be fun, especially for the head coach, and it was. He made it a sort of must-see entertainment. Favorite athletes, that's just way too hard. There were so many people that I were so special to cover. Early in my career as a college football writer, Chris Miller and Bill Musgrave, Oregon quarterbacks, were great. J.J. Burden, who was a receiver at Oregon and a long jumper, both, a triple jumper. I started covering him when he was a 130-pound kid at Lake Ridge High School. And he wasn't all that much bigger when he played for the Ducks as a wide receiver and went on and played in the NFL. And he's a great, upbeat personality. A lot of track athletes are phenomenal. Matthew Centrowitz, Andrew Weeding, Nick Simmons, all English Gardner, all magnetic personalities and very talented.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian is with us. Now, there's been some talk about you possibly coming back in some capacity, and I know retirement and some things may call, but is there any itch in you to continue to write a little bit, or where can people read you now?
Yeah, I haven't done anything recently. I have talked with the Oregonian about coming back during the track season. There's a number of really big track meets in Eugene this spring and summer, the NCAA championships, the U.S. Olympic trials, the Prefontaine Classic, you know, assuming COVID lets all that happen. And that would be very fun for me to go in and write for the Oregonian at those meets.
Yeah, you'd be covering what you want to cover. You can always say no, too. You can always go, you know what? Nah, I got to mow the lawn this weekend. Not going
to
do it.
Yeah, you know what? It's sort of up to the Oregonian. I'm pretty much willing to listen to anything that they want to have me do. So if they have talked to me about track, if there's other things that they'd be interested in me doing, that's fine. If they don't want me, then that's fine, too. Like I said, life of retirement's not bad. And, you know, if there's some other editor or media platform out there that's looking for somebody and wants to approach me, geez, go ahead. KenGoh1020@gmail.com.
I love it. Ken, before I cut you loose, the Olympics in Japan, is this happening and what does it mean to the trials? How much of the trials, you know, I know some Olympic sports have already determined who would go to Japan if the Olympics do happen. But it feels like it's a little up in the air with some of the surge in virus, surge in Japan, and some questions now.
Yeah, it is up in the air. I think it's iffy. I know that the IOC definitely wants it to go ahead. I think the last poll I saw of the Japanese public said they did not want it to go ahead. So I think a lot of it's just going to depend on, you know, where we are with the virus in a few months, whether we can get this surge under control, whether we can get the vaccine out there and distributed well enough that they can vaccinate enough people to be safe, and you know, how well the Olympic organizers can maybe bubble the athletes in Tokyo to, you know, to keep them from spreading it. I'd be surprised if it was held, if it'll be a huge spectator event. I think it might be mostly a TV thing, like, you know, sort of like what we've seen from the NBA and football this fall.
Ken, congratulations to you. Well-deserved Oregon Sports Writer of the Year in 2020, Ken Goh. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Ken Goh of the Oregonian. Good follow on Twitter as well, at Ken Goh. Leave it here. Coming up, the Culligan Water Cooler Report. Kick around the question that I asked Ken Goh of the Oregonian, your Oregon Sports Writer of the Year. What makes a good sports writer? What makes a good sports television or radio host? What goes into that in your mind? Phone number is 503-417-7575. I want you to share what you think. I'm going to go around the room as well. It brings us to our Culligan Water Cooler Report. Let's do it.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
See, I want to know what you think makes a good sports reporter, sports columnist, sports radio host, television broadcaster in sports. We've talked about the broadcasters. We played some Vin Scully last week. some Dave Niehaus. We talked about what makes a good play-by-play call, but what makes a good sports writer, in your opinion? Judah Newby, have you popped into studio? Are you mourning the Seahawks' departure from the playoffs?
Yeah. How you doing, buddy? I'm all right. I'm okay. I don't know why I like sports sometimes, but this weekend was...
You went big picture, man.
Oh, dude, this is introspection all the way around. Wow. You know, when you watch a playoff game with your wife for the very first time, your team loses, and I'm just sitting there in a other man's jersey, sipping my, you know, cold coffee and not saying anything for 2.5 hours. And she looks at me and says, "Why do you care this much?"
Yep.
And I don't really have a good answer. It turns introspection mode in a hurry, really depressed. You come back out of it Sunday, and then I'm back in it Monday. And I'm like, why do I love this team? Why do I root for this team and spend the amount of time I invest watching them play if it's just going to mean this? It doesn't make any rational sense in the world, and I'm not going to disown them by any means, but I can't afford to spend this much emotional investment in that kind of a product. I'm hurting.
Well, okay, so you're questioning that. Like, you're questioning the fundamental nature of being a sports fan. You're saying, well, why do I care so much? And to outsiders, like your wife, you guys have not yet been married a year. She's looking at it and she's going, this makes no sense. This is a logical, sane human being in every other facet of our existence. And yet when it comes to this stupid NFL team, why in the world is he so upset about this? Why does it matter so much to him? Do you have the answer to that, really? Like, if it were me, you know, and it were the 49ers, could you look over at me and make sense of it better? Or because you're immersed in it, are you questioning it all? Like, why do I sign up for this pain every year?
I think and this is just me being like as rational as possible. I don't think being a fan does make sense. You know what I mean?
Ladies and gentlemen, we are listening to a person struggle with the meaning of life.
I really am. And here's the thing. Like, I grew up immersed in sports, totally immersed in it. I remember looking at my dad and being like, all right, here's a guy. He grew up a Niner fan. But as he got older, he kind of waned out of it. Like, he doesn't root hard for the Niners anymore. You know, he doesn't really root that hard in general. And I remember being like, I'm not going to be that way. I'm going to be passionate my whole life. I'm going to be one of those guys that he becomes a husband, he becomes a father. He's still going to, you know, be rooting hard for his team with everything he's got. He's going to raise his kids that way too. And now I'm like, I kind of get where he's coming from. Yeah. I can't watch that playoff game, feel the way that I did, and look at myself and be like, yeah, I'm doing this whole sports life thing correctly. Now, that being said, I think the fundamental difference is, did you grow up with it or did you not grow up with it? You know, I love my wife, obviously, and she did not grow up being a diehard sports fan. I remember going to college with people that did not grow up being diehard sports fans, and they looked at me with that kind of that skeptical, like, disgust of, like, why do you like sports? Like, it's fake, right? It's kind of like the way, and God bless the people that love pro wrestling, it's kind of like the way I look at people that love pro wrestling, like, you know, it's fake, right? Well, that's how non-sports fans look at the sports nut. And I've grown up with it my whole life, but now I'm starting to question, like, okay, I got to start checking my emotional investment in this now, because I can't go through Saturday like that and look my wife straight in the eye and be like, yeah, I'm a balanced, well-rounded human being.
I have to be honest with you. I do sometimes look at the unhinged sports fan who's name-calling me or writing me nasty. Like, some people on a Saturday night after their team's lost, or on a Sunday morning or on a weekday, will, in that rage that they're having where they're upset, they will direct their ire towards me because I'm the one going, this team has problems. This team is stale. This team needs a new coach. This team, you know, I'm the one saying that. So they turn their aggression towards me, or it'll be like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning in recent weeks where I would get an email from a guy who's like definitely not in his best state of mind at 2 or 3 in the morning, and directing it towards me. And I'm like, why does this person care so much about it? But I get the normal diversion that is the escape that is sports. It makes sense to me. There's enough in life, and I think this is what you're wrestling with. There's enough in life that is difficult. It's frustrating. And in fact, it's not really black and white. People like to say things, well, it's not really a black and white thing. It's more like life is this series of knots and we have to untangle them. And, you know, it's not clean and it's not easy. There's enough of that in normal life. And so we go to our sports world for an escape. And you sometimes get it. You get the thrill of victory. Dun, 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 dun. But a lot of times you're the guy who's coming down the hill and the skis are going this way and that way and your team's losing and you're going, why do I do this to myself? What you're really saying, Judah, is that normal life is difficult enough. And why are you adding in this layer that was supposed to be an escape that is not really being an escape? Isn't that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And I know it's one thing to say it out loud, but then it's another thing to experience that in real time. I remember there's a guy that writes for, or he wrote about the Boston Red Sox named Mike Barnicle. You might know that name out in New England. I think he wrote for the Boston Globe for decades. And I remember he's quoted in the Ken Burns documentary on baseball, where he's watching the Red Sox lose in the 0-3 ALCS to Aaron Boone Game 7. And he's like, why am I a Red Sox fan? You know? Yeah. And I had this broken moment at the end of Super Bowl 49, and I'm like, I can't afford this in my life. I can't afford to root this hard if there's the potential for that much disappointment. And I had a mini version of it over the weekend the same way, because I was really excited about this team. And Barnicle's point in the Ken Burns documentary is, it's because of the time you spend with that team. It's the time that you spend rooting for your team. It's the time. Like, that's the great, you know, economic value of all sports fans. The time that you invest. It comes at a cost. You invest your time. I watch every Seahawk game. I watch highlights. I look at film. I like talking about them. I invest all that time only to see them flop like that. And it's one thing to criticize them on sports talk radio, and I'm, you know, all for that. But then on a very personal level, it's like, why do I invest that time? It's brutal.
I'm going to tell you why. I just want you to listen. This is
Wilson right. Looks right, throwing a back corner of the end zone, reaching up, making a catch. Vincent Jackson, touchdown. Touchdown in the NFC. The third TD pass by Russell Wilson here in the second half.
It's stuff like that.
Mariota drops, steps up. He can run a long way. 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45, 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. 87 yards. Touchdown, Titans.
It's stuff like that.
9/10 left. A 3 wins the series. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard, good! And the Blazers win the series.
It's stuff like that. It's the thrill of victory, the agony of
the 49ers have won, and you know what? For one of the rare times, what they thought was going to be a barn burner is exactly that. And of course, for the upstart 49ers, they're 6 yards away from Pontiac. 3rd and 3.
We'll see a pickup sometime on the right side, possibly.
Montana looking, throwing in the end zone. Dwight Clark!
That's it, Judah Newby.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced
Truth. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.